You're listening to a Zone Radio podcast, zoneradio.co.za.
This gardening feature is brought to you by Harry Humans Garden Center.
Hi, I'm Jeremy, owner of Harry Humans Garden Center, and I'd like to invite you to come and experience some genuine retail therapy at our special garden center, where our friendly and knowledgeable staff are waiting to help you. Come and find the perfect plant, beautiful pot, compost, potting or specialized soils, products to solve a pesky insect or fungal garden infection, and so much more. We strive to have a wide range and fair pricing. We're looking forward to seeing you soon at Harry Humans Garden Center.
It's 10:30 and time for the Garden Zone with David Parker from Budding Inspiration. And with David this morning, we have Jeremy Finn, our sponsor from Harry Humans. Good morning, good morning, morning good morning.
So are we well? Are we well?
Good morning.
We's well.
2 weeks flying, so we're here again. Yeah. We're going to do a continuation of what we were speaking about last time. As you know, just to remind everybody out there, we were talking about climbers and screening plants, Jeremy. Mm. That was your topic you brought into studio, and we obviously didn't finish. But before we go there, Jeremy, let's just let the listeners know that we, on the first conversation of every month, too, we do the what to do for the month. I know you brought some notes in for that, Jeremy. We probably spent 5 minutes on it, but look, it is cold out there. You know, lawns are battling a little bit. Sue, my lawn doesn't look nice. I got moles everywhere.
And your rose garden? No,
roses also start dipping a bit now. I've got my last flush of flowers, and then we start pruning.
But you
and pruning.
Do, yeah. But you do know, a builder and his home mechanic and his car. You know, gardeners
with
garden.
Well, we've got that beautiful pit bull puppy that does the frenzy, and she runs around. And I was just saying to Jeremy privately now that I'm seeing tufts of my grass every time she does a circle. Breaks my heart, but she's adorable, so we'll forgive her. But there are a few flowering plants, Jeremy, that obviously you can still feed flowering plants in winter. I think a lot of people get the mindset that the garden completely shuts down in winter. But no, that's not true. You've got your flowering plants that you can still feed. It's just I always try and tell plants not to feed your lawns in that, because you're trying to force growth that's not going to be there. And that's pretty much what I'm going to say, and I'm going to leave it at that. And then, have you got anything on that side, Jeremy?
Well, in terms of annuals, I think we should just mention, I don't know if we did the violas and the pansies and the primulas coming through now, because those are the winter annuals. So, you know, for those little window boxes or little pots on the patio, always nice to have a few of those, because they do bring the bright colors in the winter.
Nice. And what do you recommend for people who want annuals to keep the longevity of them? Because obviously we all know an annual is a short-lived plant, not a perennial. But you can, I mean, I've seen, old ladies who like to pick them out, keep them for months on end. If you look after them and you pinch them out, is that correct, Jeremy?
Yeah, I think, especially with the pansies as well, they do like the colder and the cooler weather. So if you have them in pots during the winter, you have to put them in more of a sunny spot during the winter. But then as we get into summer, it gets too warm for them. Then you can, if you can move those pots, you can move them into a more semi-shade position, and then you'll get them for longer. But the pinching out and making them bush out. And then you've talked about it, the feeding as well. Yeah, you can definitely do liquid feed with those throughout the season, and that's just going to keep them in the best condition.
100%. And they'll be flowering. I'm a fan of liquid feeds, to be honest, Jeremy.
Yeah.
Very much like a spray, though. I always, as you know with me, Jeremy, I always alternate my feeds. So I like to use Seagro. Some Nitrosol is a really good one. Some Calpac, you know, all adding different trace elements in that. And it's always good to change, I think, your feeding scheme a little bit, as you would when you spray for insects and bugs. And we obviously always say, when we talk about spraying, we don't want you just go out there and spray everything. You know, spray when you have to, at worst case. And obviously, that can pop into Jeremy at Harrigumans, and got all the wonderful products there. I was speaking to you about Odeon the other day. You taught me how to use a fungus on a lawn, and I'm very grateful to you for that, Mr. Fenn. So thank you, kindly, cool. Man.
I thought we'd also just talk about the weeds.
Yes.
The weeds are popping up insane with all the, well, we now finally had some good rain last week.
Yeah.
So, all the weeds are popping out, and you want to keep those under control, because if they do get.
Are you talking about lawns specifically?
No, I wasn't talking about lawns. Just beds, lawns.
Okay. Everywhere.
You know, in the lawn, it's a little bit difficult because the lawn is sort of dormant, while most of the lawns slow down. But in the beds and stuff, you want to put that thick layer of mulch down if you haven't got it already. Or just make sure that you're pulling out those weeds, because, you know, they are robbing the soil of 100%. Nutrients. And then they're also going to maybe overtake the real plants that you want to keep. So you don't want to neglect those.
That I'm just walking in on my clients are the creepers. mm-hmm. that get into everything are prolific at the moment. You know, it's obviously their growing period. I mean, all the morning glory is in full spectacular growth with all the purple flowers.
Yes.
But a creeper is a very difficult thing to get out once it takes hold, Jeremy.
Yeah.
So I always tell my clients and my teams that what we do, if you've got a creeper that's ravaged a shrub, for example, it's very difficult to pull a living creeper out of a bush. Just follow it down to the ground, find where it's rooted, pull the root out,
yeah.
and then give it a week or two or three,
or chop it
and
from it there.
will just eventually become brittle in the bush and fall out. So
yeah.
a bit of good advice, I think, for anybody who's battling with major creeper issues. Some of my big Constantia homes, you know, like you look 1 week and the next week the whole hedge is covered, you know. So
yeah, we've got a problem at my house with it's like a funny succulenty leaf kind of vine.
I know exactly,
and it makes
which
those like those
about.
Little bullet-y yes. kind of things as well. And you pull that thing out and you think you got rid of it, and then all of a sudden you've got it snaking through. I've got a like a rambling rose.
Yes.
Over this big trellis thing, and then all of a sudden you see this other, and it's totally different leaf, so you can definitely notice it.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I thought I got rid of that thing, and there it comes again. So
I hate to badmouth plants that are designed to be planted, but yes, Jeremy, that creeping foxglove, that Asastacea, I think I've mentioned it to you. You know, if you're in a massive home and you've got a 400 kilometer bed, plant it. It takes everything over. I've got a complex that I really am, as you just said, we think we got the roots out. We go back in a week and I hope there it is shooting again from the
yeah.
ground. It's a vicious little plant.
It is, yeah. Definitely recommended as something if you want to just cover the ground and you want to under trees or something that you can't get anything to grow.
100%.
You can definitely try that Asastacea, but as you say, it does have a weedy tendency.
Keep it in check, I tell you. Make sure you know. And then one last thing I wanted to mention for the winter and that, Jeremy, and then we can move on to the continuation of the topic from 2 weeks ago, was it's a really good time of year now to transplant. So if you, and obviously not flowering shrubs, let's just reiterate that, anything that's flowering, you don't really want to move.
Uh-huh.
As soon as you cut, because when you transplant a plant, you have to take a third off. It's mm-hmm. a general rule of thumb. So if something's flowering, you don't want to cut a third off, because if you do, you'll find that you'll actually have the sap that runs out. It's all the life energy of the plant dissipating because you've cut. And remember, the plant will send all its energy to the flowers to flower. Mm-hmm. So you transplanting any flowering plant is never recommended. But, you know, a third, reduce it, try and get a good root ball out and make the hole and move it. I'm just mentioning it for people that have been thinking about moving something. This is the right time because of the weather as well. It's
yes.
cool. The roots are sort of dormant generally if it's not a flowering plant. I keep saying that. But yeah, so I just sort of mentioned that.
Yeah, just on that as well, we have talked about it, like autumn is a good time to do all your shrubs and plants. Now we're into winter, so, you know, it's not a bad time of year to also think about, like when we were talking about the climbers or yes. planting a hedge, this is a good time to put it in, because then at least you're going to have, hopefully, the rain and, like we talked about, and less of the southeaster.
Yep.
So that the plants can establish. So that's, you know, the heat and the wind are going to cause problems to a transplanted plant, because that's where they're going to lose all that through transpiration, whatever. They're going to lose that energy. So when we don't have the wind and we don't have the beating sun, then it's obviously a good time. So that's why when you're
100%.
Talking about. So, you know, transplanting out of a bag or even transplanting something in the garden, definitely the best time.
Yeah, fantastic. And then just last bit of advice on that is, remember, if you're moving a plant, Jeremy, plants aren't privileged like us to have legs and walk around. So if a plant grows in a certain position, it's got used to the sun path.
Mm-hmm.
Very important. People don't even think like that. And it's important to tie a piece of string either on the north or the south, whatever you wear, wherever. And where you plant it back, you've actually got to make sure that it's facing the same way, because it was its life path. It's grown up knowing that the sun is from east to west there, and it mm-hmm. follows that growth. So very important. And then the last thing is, I've always noticed that a lot of people will move a plant, do the cutting on that, Jeremy, but they water the hole they've dug, like, excessively, thinking that, and you move the plant, and their plant dies, and they say, but why is the plant dying? The key is to actually water the plant before you move it, because what happens then is it absorbs its water in its roots. It's got a wonderful full root, a full belly, if you want to say. Then you move it, and then it's less likely to go into shock and die on you. Putting a plant in a hole and watering excessively isn't going to absorb the water if it's going into shock already. So just a little bit of advice. But I think that's us for what to do for June. And I think we'll try and finish off the screening climbers and creepers, Jeremy, that we spoke about last time.
Yeah, I think we could probably go over some of the plants that we talked about. We talked about jasmines, and another one that I don't know if I mentioned last time was the Pandorea. or, yeah, because that's got like a little trumpet flower, yes. Pink trumpet. Those are really good. And then also the Portrait St. John's or Zimbabwe Creeper.
Yes.
The Podrania. Now, those ones are very vigorous. So you also have to have quite a large space for them. But in terms of doing really well in our sort of climate here with the wind, they stand up to the wind really well. And then
which
I think
is very important.
Yeah, definitely. Especially if you're using it as a screen.
Yeah.
But that one also can go over other shrubs and plants as well and sort of cover them. So you've got to be just conscious of where you're planting it and what you're doing with it. Yeah, and then we did talk a little bit about the rhoecissus, I think. Did we talk about rhoecissus?
No, we didn't speak about rhoecissus. No. So that would be a good one to chat about.
Yeah, the rhoecissus, there's the one with the smaller leaf is the digitata. And that gets a little berry. Well, actually, they both get a little berry. And then there's also the rhoecissus tricuspidata, which has more like a hand shape.
Say that three times more, Jerry. Come on, Jerry. I dare you not to. That's impressive, man. Really
yeah,
cool.
So those are really good because they're also indigenous, well, to South Africa.
Okay.
And they produce a little berry. So sometimes it's not ideal if you don't want lots of birds and stuff, okay. But people do want, you know, birds in their gardens. So those
and these ones, to interrupt you, Jeremy, we spoke last time on climbers that have tentacles that grip and climbers that we're going to need trellising for. Are these self-gripping ones or do we
no,
do
they're twining. Yeah, no, they will have to have a structure.
Have a structure for them. Okay, cool.
Yeah, but both of them also work quite nicely in semi-shade as well.
Nice.
Which is handy because, yeah, sometimes you don't have a full sun position. So, and yeah, both of them are really tough. Once established, they can handle the wind as well.
Very
so
cool.
So it's a good option. And oh, I think we did talk about black-eyed Susans a little bit.
I don't remember that, but I find black-eyed Susans very temperamental.
Yeah. I was going
to
say
gorgeous when they're full, but I've never had good luck with them, to be honest, Jimmy. And they're very soft to the touch, you know, like you feel you can just break them under.
Yeah, I think that what those ones and that wild pea, that dipogon, those ones both need to be in positions or maybe on another creeper so that they intertwine.
Oh, okay.
So that you
can like a companion plant.
Yeah, exactly. Because they
smother each other.
By themselves, they can be very sparse and not look, you know, and also.
And they bunch at the bottom and then they get sort of dead in the matty inside.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then the tops are all nice and green and full of flower and then the base sometimes goes a little bit off and
stuff. Very much like there's a ground cover called an octotus. I don't know if people noticed that gray one, Jeremy.
Yeah.
Very much that's why I don't really use it much because it's beautiful once it takes, but it grows so lekker long and then the flower is all flowering 3 meters on the end and then the middle where it's rooted is all dead and clumpy and it looks terrible. And it's just difficult to get out, you know. So, we were talking about the creepers, Jeremy, the black-eyed Susies creeping into each other.
Yeah, and then we did mention the ones that actually stick to the wall a little bit as well, the ivies,
yes.
And that you can't get English
You've
ivy
said
in
that
them.
Now, yeah.
And then the tiki creeper, we talked about that.
Yeah.
I was just actually, we were at the Harbour Bay?
Yeah, the New Malden something.
Yeah, yeah. And just seeing the tiki creeper all over the walls there and how good it looks. So, yeah, in those
situations. I
mentioned
2 weeks ago the Majestic to you. I used to manage the Majestic in Cork Bay, and that's obviously been there for years. And I must say, it is stunning. It is stunning. But you mentioned on the roots, you've got to watch the thick stem ones because they can get pretty radical on the walls, can't they?
Yeah. Yeah, I know there is also that the juvenile is the one that you want. That's the small round leaves. And then you get the adult form, which is the bigger leaves, and you don't really want that because it sticks off the wall as well. You want that flat one perfectly against the wall. But that, it does have the feet, so you're going to be in trouble if you want to try and rip that off.
100%. And then, we're speaking specifically about creepers and climbers now, so I think we mentioned the tree screeners last time a little bit. We didn't get into too much detail, but we mentioned the Eugenia, which is an Australian cherry tree.
Yes.
Is a bane to a lot of clients who have a swimming pool right next to it, especially when it does flower on the berries.
Uh-huh.
But I know that a viburnum as well is a well-used tree for screening.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a slower grower, but it right now in winter is probably in its best time because it goes into full flower now. There are beautiful white flowers all over it. So I love a viburnum as well in the right place. And then another one that I always say to Sue when it comes to gardening, Jeremy, it's planning is the key to any good garden. Because if you want a bed below a tree, you can't plant a Eugenia.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a full hedge from the ground up.
Yes.
So there are certain other trees, Jeremy, that like a Syzygium panicatum, or no, that's the Eugenia. the Guinea, sorry.
It's, yeah.
I love that one because it's a tree that will almost grow above a wall.
Yes.
And then you can almost use it as a hedge to screen a neighbor.
Over the vibecree or whatever.
But then you've got the whole stem, and I love it. I don't know why, but when I do cleanups and how's that been cut, I love raising trees up and you get that beautiful shape. I mean, I really do. But that's just a little bit of a side note. So if you want a bed underneath your hedge, you've got to come to Jeremy and get the right tree and obviously the advice from you guys. And good old Arthur there.
Yes. Yeah, well, the other thing is you've got to also decide if you want something that's flowering. The problem comes in when you've got the tachomas.
Yes.
Talked about this before, and you want it to flower, but then at the same time, if you let it flower, then it gets a little bit unruly.
Yes.
So you've got to have that sort of back and forth with yourself, like, are we going to let this thing flower, or are we going to just keep it trimmed and keep it neat?
I've got a lot of honeysuckle and plumbago hedges that are bare on the side to keep them flat and beautiful flowers on top. We try and do that every season for, like, complicas that want that squareness, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So the tachoma or the honeysuckle, yellows, oranges, reds, salmon color. And then you just mentioned now the plumbagos as well. That's also an excellent one with the blue and the white.
Yeah.
Those work extremely well in our conditions here as hedges. And
they get a bit leggy, the plumbago, I find, though. As they get a bit taller, Jeremy, they kind of fall on in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it is quite difficult as well, because it's so when I do hedges, I said it to you last time, you try and cut little holes in, you know, just mm-hmm. to allow the middle of the hedge to be healthy as well. Because what normally happens is we do it as well, because clients always want the hedges, but you keep cutting the top and the sides,
yeah,
and it creates like a thick mat of leaves, which looks beautiful. But as soon, like 5 centimeters behind that, it hasn't had any sun in there, and it actually is bare. So we actually did speak about that. So as you cut it back, it's always good to keep it. I always like to cut a little bit further back and let the sun in a little bit, and just keep it to be healthy on the sides there.
I think they work well, very well on those like diamond mesh fences.
Yes, yes.
Because you can actually tie it onto the fence a little bit as well, so that it sort of mats into it, like almost like a bit of a climbing sort of feature. But you can get it through that fence and just make sure it stands up nicely. And then the other thing that you can talk about when you do a hedge is if you want it as more of a security hedge.
Yes.
And then you're going to start moving to the things that have thorns. Yeah.
What's that? That'll be your kayapple,
definitely.
Num-nums.
Yes, carissas. And the carissas.
Yeah. Also, very beautiful bird-encouraging plants, the carissa.
Yeah.
The fruit is edible.
Yes.
Let me get that word out right. So that's...
Both of them, actually.
Yes.
Kayapple as well.
The kayapple gets a bit of a bigger fruit, if I'm not mistaken.
No, other way around.
Okay.
So the carissa gets that quite large red.
Gotcha.
When it's ripe. And then the kayapple gets a smaller round, like a... What's that, like a 2 rand coin, maybe,
and then
2 rand 50 coin.
The other one that I always see that's got thorns and beautiful berries is the cotoneasters.
Yes.
Are they indigenous?
No.
They're not, eh?
No.
I thought not. But they're also beautiful screening plants.
Do very well.
But I find that the num-num not so bad, but the kayapples are very slow growers.
Both of them, actually.
So you got to have patience. And obviously, sometimes in that case, it's better to buy them in a bit bigger than, in my opinion, and mm-hmm. get them straight in, you know. I actually use some to stop wild animals coming to the fence from a client in Somerset, right at the top of the fence. But yeah, it's worked very well. And then again, like, I suppose the key to everything, Jeremy, is, as you said, we could plant now, get a bit of the winter rains.
Mm-hmm.
But everything, especially hedges going forward, do need good watering, don't they, Jeremy, in summer specifically? With that wind that you've been talking about, the wind and fish, we all know, we all got a skew head. We walk around like this, you know, all the trees are skew. We all a little bit skew this side of the world, aren't we? Well, that's awesome. you're not right, though, Jeremy. So it's important to make sure you water, obviously feeding any hedge, you know, to keep it thick and healthy. And again, pruning is essential to any growth and to keep it looking good in that, Jeremy, in my
opinion. It's that once established and they hit the water table, then it's a different story. But it's those first few years. People think sometimes, we've mentioned this before, but something that is water-wise or drought-tolerant becomes drought-tolerant.
Yes.
It doesn't start off 100%. When you just plant it to be drought-tolerant. So you've still got to nurture that plant and give it deep watering during the first summer and the second summer, just to make sure that it gets those roots down to where it needs to be. And then it's drought tolerant.
Definitely.
And you can cut back on the watering and maybe even not even water some of these shrubs. It's just going to be that, you know, perennial hedge or whatever that doesn't even need need the watering.
Very true, very true. And then there's something weird that I was reading the other day, and I was actually speaking to a guy about it, and we talk about those, any plant needs a bit of TLC and care, but one tree we haven't spoken about for hedging, and they're just, is the chrysanthemoides.
Yeah, I was actually looking out the window over here.
Is it there, over there?
Yeah, in the middle there.
Oh, there it is. Hello. Well, that thing is so indigenous. I mean, it's obviously endemic to Cape Town, meaning it's born and raised here.
Yeah.
Highly prolific. But what I love about it is it can actually be very well shaped.
Yes.
And what we were speaking about the other time is, just to end off the show after your last conversation, is that it can be used as what we call a pioneer plant. So if you want to plant like a bunch of proteas,
yeah,
and you know they're going to need protection from the wind in summer and some help, you can actually plant those with them behind, yeah, them, and they grow four times faster.
Exactly.
So in summer, you're going to get a protection from the major wind if you just leave it open on a big area, for example. And that's something that obviously the catch to that is then in a few months or a year or two, you're going to have to remove them.
Mm-hmm.
Not selective, but you know, we talk about cycles. You can remove them, mulch them, and put them back, and they can become useful, I would imagine, Jeremy.
Yeah, definitely.
Lekker. Anything else you want to add to the conversation, Jeremy?
Well, just the one thing that you we haven't talked about is like an extremely formal hedge, and that would be like maybe a Buxus.
Buxus.
Slow growing.
And the Ruscronata, but when you get them smaller.
Yeah.
And then I had a client get one the other day, and I cannot think of the name of it.
Myrtus?
I think it was Myrtus. It was absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, those you can also, you know, topiary, yeah, and
salt bushes?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got a very strange smell to them. It's like a really pungent smell, you know. I don't know if people know the placanthus that you walk on and you get that smell.
The catwee one.
Yeah. So fun when you cut them. So those are good ones. And again, just to end off, I mean, as we know, Jeremy, if anybody needs any advice or even just to have a visual look at the plants, guys, Jeremy's around the corner. Harry Gibbons is amazing. The coffee shop is beautiful. Coffee's one of the best coffees you'll get this side of the world. I promise you that. Pop down to Harry Gibbons and have a look, and let Jeremy take a walk with you and can choose your plants.
And a question, why is yesterday, today, and tomorrow so difficult to grow in some areas?
Because yesterday was not today, and then tomorrow it's difficult. No, I'm teasing. They're very English plants too.
Yes.
Yesterday, tomorrow's not indigenous.
But it smells, it's got a beautiful smell.
Yes.
And a lot of people, they do flower, but they actually like a little bit of dappled shade. I think my memory serves me correct.
Like a morning sun. Yeah. I think morning sun would be best for those.
100%.
And I think they also can be a little bit temperamental.
Yeah.
It's one of those where I over water and then all of a sudden it's
100%. I do find that the best ones that clients have are the ones in pots. But mm-hmm. people that, as you just said, overwatering will kill. But people that sort of know them well and look after them, then they can be profuse, to be honest with you. But again, it's just the right position, right climate, right feeding. You know, if you're in a pot too, you need nutrients. So it's good to put that in a good feed, et cetera.
Right, so is that it?
That was a nice one. That was a full one. And Jeremy, you're back in 2 weeks with me again. I love it.
And
we'll figure out a topic for then.
Give out your number.
My number is it zero? Oh no, that's the studio number. 073-247-0351. If you want to give me a call, and buddinginspirations@gmail.com is my email. I know it's a long one, but I'm sure it will be on the Zone podcast and that. And then Jeremy Harry Goodman sent it down the road.
Yes. Yeah, on Kormicki Road.
You can't miss it. But Jeremy, just in case we've got listeners from afar and they would like to now come and check out what you've got. They can get you on online.
We've got a website. Website doesn't have. It's more like a contact portal. Yes. So our number and a little bit of a few pictures.
So it's all there.
Yeah. Otherwise, the Facebook page. I think Cecil, posts quite a few things and little videos and showing off.
Cecil posts everything.
Yeah. That's true.
I love Cecil.
So there we go. So thank you guys for coming in and sharing your knowledge with us.
Thank you, Mr. Fan.
And you'll be back in 2 weeks.
Two weeks together again.
And I see you on two wheels.
Yeah, I'm on my bike.
You on four and he's on two.
Today. I can't believe I'm riding my bike. I must have my hands were a bit cold this morning, though. Anyway, thanks to you.
Ciao, ciao.